Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specing, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember, to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. Lines are open. If you're listening to us online and you want to join us on the call, dial us up right now, 347-884-8327. Tonight is wide open. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. Politics, trucks, specs, issues, whatever it might be. And as always, I know I say this every night, but it happens every show. We get down towards the end of the show, and I start seeing more and more questions, and I always feel bad when we have to end the show and we've got questions holding. So if you want to join us on the call and you've got a question, a comment, a topic, pick up the phone and dial into the call right now, 347-884-8327. If you're on the call and you've got a question or a comment or something you'd like to talk about, tonight is your night. Press 1. You'll talk to Lisa first. She'll screen your call, and then we'll get you on the air. I don't really have a whole lot tonight. I figured I would leave it open for your questions tonight. A couple things going on, but like I said, tonight is your night, so we're just going to jump right into calls and see what happens tonight, see what it is you want to talk about. Let's go to Kansas to start off tonight. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Going good. What's on your mind tonight?
Good. I had an additional question. Bridgestone 280s for steers, what do you think of those?
Bridgestone 280s, why can't I remember that tire? Let me go look that one up while we're talking about other stuff, and we'll see what the rolling resistance numbers are.
Okay, I've got a classic 03, and I bought this truck pretty right, so I'm just going to put money into this and try to get the fuel mileage up on it. And what I want to do is pull the stacks and the air cleaners.
Okay.
And I've already got the muffler mounted underneath. I haven't hooked it up yet, but it's under
got
there.
Got it. Okay. All right.
And the other thing is Pittsburgh Power sells a disposable, and I don't know what it's called, the disposable air cleaner that's a 13.5 diameter by 27 inches long.
Okay.
And I think I can find a spot for it under there if I disconnect the T where everything comes in from both sides. My question is if I take the inlet out to like the left side of the truck where that old inlet is that goes out to the canister, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do I keep rain from and moisture from coming in that? It didn't sound like they had any kind of attachment. I just was wondering what your thought was on that.
You said this was a 379?
No, classic Freightliner.
Classic Freightliner. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know right now Fleet Air Filter is working on an intake system for a 379.
that gets rid of the canisters. And those systems are pretty similar. Yeah, this is the first one they're building, and I think they're going to install it here in about 2 or 3 weeks. That may be a good place to get ideas from, as far because they're fabricating that first one all by hand. So, and you know what? That's David Counts of Fleet Air Filters. I'm actually going to be with him this weekend. So I'll run that by him, and we'll sit down and kind of sketch out some ideas, and I'll see what he's been working on fabricating that thing, so I'll see what he's come up with.
Okay, that'd be great. Yeah, I think, do you think that's a good idea to do on these classic trucks? I mean, is it going to be worth the time and money to do those modifications?
I believe so. I mean, when you look at, you know, look at the difference between a Freightliner Classic and a Freightliner Coronado. And we were able to squeeze really good fuel mileage out of the Coronado. And if you take the air cleaners and the stacks off, the Classic is almost as clean aerodynamically as a Coronado is. So there isn't any reason why. I think those are the two big aerodynamic problems on that truck. And I think if we get rid of them, as long as, and this is what we're working on, as long as when you get rid of the stacks and the cans, you keep the same airflow in and out, and actually we're finding that if we do it right, we can improve the airflow in and out and get rid of that aerodynamic problem. So, yeah, there are some gains to be made there.
Okay, good. Yeah, that was my thoughts. After listening to you for the last couple of months, I kind of decided, you know, I was weighing back and forth. You get to know a truck, and I'm just going to try to get this one to improve. And I'm interested in hearing what you come up with on that.
I think if I had to put some numbers to it now, we've got, you know, some Coronados and Columbias pushing that 9 mile per gallon mark. When you really, you know, focus on fuel mileage and do everything we possibly can, we're starting to push that 9. And I think even with a Classic with some modifications, that 8 is possible. When you start getting up into, you know, anything above 7.5, I mean, you're making a lot of money. You really don't have to worry anymore about fuel mileage once you're up above that 7.5 mark. I think what happens is people get up above 7.5, and it almost becomes a challenge. I mean, for some people, it becomes like an obsession. You know, how can I get a little more? But what we find is when you start getting up there, that return on investment starts getting smaller and smaller, and it takes longer to pay certain things back. But again, I think people do it thinking long-term and kind of a challenge. But a really good goal is if we get any truck up above 7.5, that's pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, I'd be happy with 7.
Yeah.
You know, and I say that, and I know I'm exactly like you. I think I know if I get 7, I'm gonna start pushing it to get more. You know, so and there's a lot you can do. You know, so I've been listening to you for a while, and started just thinking, well, I'm just gonna go for it, and if it works, it's a bonus. If it doesn't, well, it's an adventure.
Yeah, and you know what? More and more we're finding that it does work. If we just focus on it, we make these modifications one at a time, and we make fuel mileage the priority, there are very few trucks that we can't get up into those numbers. Now, occasionally, we run into one of those trucks where everything seems right, and for some reason we just can't get any fuel mileage out of them. But that's pretty rare. Doesn't happen very often.
Right. Well, is it typical to drop a mile per gallon with a headwind? I mean, is that I pull a reefer, so is that abnormal?
No, it's really not. I mean, when you think about how much speed affects fuel mileage, we know that if you slow down 10 miles an hour, we pick up 1 full mile per gallon. Well, the biggest thing that we're overcoming when we slow down is we're really reducing the wind resistance. We also reduce rolling resistance and mechanical resistance some, but the biggest factor is 10 miles an hour slower is a lot less wind resistance. Well, throw in a 30-mile-an-hour headwind, and, yeah, we can easily lose a mile per gallon.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because I do, it can go, I mean, it can fluctuate a mile to a mile point two just with the same load and the wind switching direction.
Well, and you will see that will affect you worse because the more aerodynamic problems we have on the truck and trailer combination, the more that wind is going to affect us. If we have a really slick truck and trailer combination, a 10-mile-per-hour headwind won't affect us nearly as much as if we've got a classic, you know, pulling cars or, you know, pulling ugly, you know, step deck freight. So the worse we are aerodynamically, the more that wind is going to have an effect on our fuel mileage.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, did you happen to find those tires while we're...
I did. You said the 280s?
Yeah, the Bridgestone 280s.
109. Not bad at
109.
All.
109. So, yeah. Okay, that's good. All right. Okay, well, that's all I have. I'll wait to hear. I'll just keep listening and see if you come up with any results on that.
Yeah, if...
379.
If you miss it on the show or if you don't happen to catch it, do you have the number for Fleet Air Filters?
I probably don't.
Okay. I will...
Can I pick it up on the website?
Yeah, you know what? If you're going to hang on the call, I'll get it out to you. Well, here it is, Lisa's quick on the draw. You ready?
Hold on just one sec.
I'll just do a little song and dance to entertain everybody while we're waiting. All right. 251-654-0892. Now, we've been working on several projects with them. The first, you know, was the Fleet Air Filter itself, which was improving airflow, and it's a lifetime filter, so, you know, there's just a lot of benefits to it. But David's kind of an interesting guy. I mean, he's kind of like the fuel mileage thing. You know, he has a filter that's doing much better, and yet he didn't want to stop. Now he's redesigning the end cones of the filter and directing airflow. Then he started looking at redesigning intake systems. And I'll tell you what we're finding is that because there are so many different truck models and so many different intake systems, that it's just not going to be feasible to redesign every intake. We may work on something for the classics to get the canisters off because that's a big improvement. But what we found is that most of the air canisters, whether they're outer hood, under hood, doesn't matter, there's not enough room around the filter, and the air is coming in and hitting the filter and only using about a third of the filter element or less because the air is not circulating right, which is restricting airflow, and it's not allowing us to use the filter very much. So we either have to clean the filter more often or we have to change it more often if you're using a paper element. So what he's working on now is leaving the housings in place, if it's an under hood. Leave the housing alone because just it's too expensive to fabricate new housings for every truck. But he's designing smaller and smaller filters that will still be just as effective, and it opens up that airspace around the filter. And we've done some flow testing on it. He's getting a little more than 3/4 of the way around the filter now. Uh-oh, I think we lost him. The call's just gone completely. All right, well, I've got some other questions. If you're on the line with us, press 1, and we will get to your calls here. If you are listening online and you want to join us on the call, there are still some lines open, 347-884-8327. David and Pam from Fleet Air Filters will be up here with us in Tennessee at Truck City Service over the weekend, and then we will probably try to get back down there maybe one more time before Dallas, and we may have some new ideas and new concepts in air filters at the Dallas Truck Show. In fact, we've got a couple surprises coming up for the Dallas Truck Show, some things we will hint at and tease you with, but we're not going to release them, I think, until the truck show gets here. A couple projects we're working on, so stick around for that. David is also the guy that is building the signature B-Series truck, the 97 T600. It's got 1.5 million miles on it. It's pretty rough. Got good bones. It's got a lot of potential, but it is pretty rough. I'm thinking that sometime this week we will drag that thing into the shop. We're going to pull the cab off of it and start the cab restoration off of the frame. We will continue to post pictures on the progress as well. So if you're interested in seeing the truck, the way it sits right now, it's pretty rough looking. There is a forum up on the website right at the very top. We're naming the project and naming the truck Stealth. That's all we're going to tell you right now. Let's go to Orlando. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you doing?
Good. What's going on in Orlando tonight?
I'm stopping by your house, watering some plants. Lisa asked me to take care of.
Oh, okay, good, thanks. That's what I was going to do. I guess Lisa already beat me to it, though.
Hey, I got a question for you. The weekend after the CMC, I blew my turbo.
Oh, you're kidding.
And, no. All that great talk about my truck and my turbo goes.
Yeah.
It was in the shop. I literally drove 2 miles from the Detroit shop to... they did the overhead and a charge air cooler test.
Okay.
Do you see any connection to that?
probably not. You know, I think it's just one of those things that it was a coincidence. I mean, they're really trying to think of something if they really screwed something up. Probably not, though. Even if they totally screwed something up, it would probably take longer. I think it's just a coincidence, and the turbo was ready to go anyway. Were you able to tell what failed on the turbo?
Yeah, it's a 2010 Cascadia with the DD15. They said they've been having problems with the bearings in the turbo.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't think there's any correlation between the work they were doing and what happened.
All right, because they keep just telling me, you know, it's covered under warranty, be happy. And I'm like, I was down for a week because y'all's customer service sucks.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. You know, warranty, I guess it's nice that we don't have to pay for it out of our pocket, but we still pay for it anyway when the truck sits there all week.
Yeah, I wasn't real happy about being in a hotel room for another week.
No. Yeah, well, yeah, after you just spent a week at one.
But that's all. I appreciate it. Had a great time.
All right. Fantastic. Fantastic. I appreciate it. Let's see. All right. We've got some hands up. If you're on the call, you've got questions, comments, topics, whatever it might be, press 1. Lisa will get to you. We do still have some lines open, so if you want to join us, if you're listening online, you want to jump in on the call itself, there's still some room. 347-884-8327 is the phone number. Let's head off to Joplin, Missouri this time. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I'm a retired police officer out of Chicago calling again.
Yes, what's up tonight?
So I'm trying to do the best of both worlds, get the good Michelin rolling resistant tires on the two drive axles. I was thinking, could I put the lug style on the active drive axle and the Z-rated all position tires on the second drive axle?
I'm not wild about mixing tires like that. Now we did it on the we do it when it's a lift axle. When it's a lift axle, we actually go to a trailer tire, which doesn't, you know, handle any torque, but has a really low rolling resistance. But when I've got two drive axles, I really like to keep matched tires on them.
So don't run the XZ on one and then the XZ on the other?
Did you say XD, X-ray Delta, and X-ray Zebra, right?
I'd run an X-ray David and then an X-ray Zebra on, you know, on one type of tire off on each end.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not wild about that. I mean, we get some height differences, and you know, if we want to, you know, the best way to rotate is in a cross, an X pattern, so that kind of screws up the tire rotation. I guess we could still do it. We'd end up, you know, flipping axles and sides.
Just doing it
right. Part of my hesitation is just that I've never done it, so I don't know what to expect.
Because I don't like to give up that lug pattern. I'm still old school, but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, but if you go with the XDA Energy, that is actually a lower rolling resistance than the XZA3.
Oh, so go with the XDA, and that's a lug style, and it's a lower RR?
Yeah, XDA Energy, X-ray Delta Alpha Energy. It's a lug tire, and the rolling resistance is 99. The all-position tire is 102.
Here's another one for you. Sequence of installing Fast System, Larger Turbo, Pittsburgh, ECM.
Does budget matter? I mean, could we afford the ECM first?
Yeah.
I would do the ECM first if you have the budget for it.
And then what's second?
Then I would go with the turbo.
Oh,
and then
the fast.
Yeah.
The way I've been explained to me by a couple of guys, they're saying fast first to handle the extra performance. Okay, so it's ECM, then turbo, then fast. All right, got it.
The reason I say that is mostly because I haven't had completely consistent fuel mileage results back on the fast. There are some people who have reported back that they're not getting the kind of fuel mileage improvements that they thought. They absolutely see it in idle and performance right away. And many people are getting fuel mileage results back, but it's not quite as consistent as the ECM and the turbo we know you're going to see the fuel mileage results on. Well, let me clarify that. The ECM, as long as you drive it right.
Yeah, I drive it like an old man. I'm in a T600 with a Series 60, so I should see the results.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So we've had some people report back that they, and that goes for any fuel mileage device. I mean, we always get that. Somebody will say, well, I didn't get the results or I didn't get this. And sometimes you don't. I mean, not everything works on every truck, and sometimes maybe somebody wasn't tracking things right. So it's hard to say, but I feel more confident in, you know, a quicker return on investment on those other things. But I would still absolutely do the fast. I would just make it third.
Yeah, I'll go to Bruce and have him do both of them at once. I'll save a couple of pennies together and make it happen.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Thanks for the call. Have a great evening. Let's see. We are off this time to let's go to Steve in California. Welcome to the program.
Well, good evening.
Hello there. Hey, what's up tonight?
I was offended. You're talking about me about being obsessed with fuel economy. I'm sure you were talking about me.
I was talking about you. I didn't know you were listening.
Yes. The quickest return on investment, though, you're talking about a return on investment, was the 35 cents for the hose clamps for the air supply line to the air compressor, though. But,
is that working out good for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wish I would have listened to everybody earlier. You know, no, the hose is fine. The hose is fine, you know, until I pressure tested. If I would have pressure tested the whole system right away, like you suggest, I may have found it, but I've probably lost thousands of dollars the last couple of years through that.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
I gained about 2 pounds of turbo boost, so.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I found it after we put the Evans coolant in, so it kind of throws off the, you know, the test there.
The numbers, right? Yeah. And I've had that happen many times. No matter how many ways you try to control things, sometimes that's what happens. But, you know, as I think overall, and especially when somebody gets to the point where you are on fuel mileage, you're doing a lot of things, you've done a lot of things, there are certain things we know that it's going to improve, and we just might not know exactly how much, and that's what we're trying to measure. But overall, I think you get to that point where you know that as we make these changes, we want to continually see that fuel mileage number go up. And we're not quite so concerned about what was the exact return. We just want to see that number keep getting better.
Great. I've noticed, though, since I've done the Evans coolant and found the that hose clamp there, I don't have so many ups and downs. It's a pretty straight line, you know. I mean, it doesn't vary as much, you know, so which is probably a good thing.
That is, that's a good point, because a lot of times when I get somebody whose fuel mileage is, you know, average is an important number, and that it's what we need to watch when we're tracking fuel mileage, but variance is also an important number. You know, what's the variance from that average, and how often does it vary, and the best trucks are the ones that are really consistent. And when we get a truck that's inconsistent, that's one of the hardest things to diagnose.
Right. So I was going to ask you, what do you think the difference in rolling resistance when you're driving over a loose number two stone? I was on the Alaska Highway earlier this week.
Wow. Yeah.
When I went up in February, they told me that it's smoother in the wintertime. I said, well, that can't be, but it is smoother in the wintertime.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the testing that I found on road surface, the two extremes that they used was polished concrete and chip and seal blacktop.
Right.
And that variance between those two extremes was 30% in fuel economy. Now you're on number two gravel. That's worse than chip and seal blacktop.
Well, it wasn't all like that, but you know, all of the Yukon is chip and seal. They don't pave. It's chip and
right.
seal because pavement it busts up and it costs them too much money. So yeah, the whole province is chip and seal. Although I don't think it was doing 30% difference. To me, but I think it's more I can't have the backdraft deployed. I can tell a difference when I'm up in Canada because I have to have that folded up there. So,
oh, that's
you know,
right.
Then when I'm in the States, I can pop it back out again. So,
yeah.
So first, DOT in Alaska. So that's the first time I've ever seen anything like that. Yeah, I suppose not too many people get up to. Canada with trailer tails on or whatever, you know.
Well, that's a pretty wild setup you've got there.
Yeah, well, I like it. I wish I had time to perfect it, but
you'll get there.
Got to keep on working, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Got to pay the bills.
That's right. Oh, a couple things. I said, yeah, I haven't loped. The engine doesn't lope since I had it. It will do it, but not as bad. and if it
okay.
cools down just a little bit. So, and I've noticed too, it starts turning red after a while. I think it must be dye stuck in the system from the old coolant, you know, because I looked at
okay.
the tank. Holy smokes, what is this red stuff in here? But I have a feeling it's stuff is going to have to die from that. So either that or somebody drained it out and put in the other stuff on me without me knowing. Let's hope.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Yeah. But it's great, though. I don't have to back out of it. And this truck, I've always had to do that. It's great. I wish somebody would have done that years ago. It makes a whole lot of sense. I can't imagine why the engine manufacturers aren't latching onto it. But, well.
You know why they're not? And it's so funny because I hear from the OEMs all the time about all the aftermarket modifications and products that, you know, the OEMs like to claim if this stuff worked, we'd be doing it. And nothing could be farther from the truth. The OEMs, that truck built, is the engineers, if you just let the engineers loose and let them build any truck they wanted to, our trucks would be wildly different from what we have today. The problem is the engineers are constrained by everybody else and mostly the accountants. The accountants say, no, you can't add $40 to the cost of this truck because we can't be competitive, and if you keep adding to the cost of the truck, you know, we'll no longer be competitive in the market. And it sounds crazy when you're talking about a truck that cost $130,000 that they worry about dollars, but they do. They've got the cost of that truck down to the dollars, and their attitude about this is, look, every OEM still uses glycol and water. Why would we change?
Well, in the mid-80s, when Cummins went to the low-flow cooling, I know you said you hadn't run into that, and you're lucky. It was a disaster, and they kept the water circulating in the around the combustion chamber. They circulated faster, kept it in, so it remained hotter. So, you know, they were doing all of this stuff to raise the temperature, what, 5 degrees maybe, 10 degrees? And it was
right.
a disaster because, well, they were dealing with water, and you have,
exactly.
If you didn't have the right water pump in, the engine would fail. If you didn't have the right heads on, the engine would fail. And I had both happen. it was a disaster. And all they'd have to do is go to this. It's simple. It's amazing.
Fixes
really
the problem.
Is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I just love going by hills and seeing people. I don't like to see people overheating, but I say, well, I've been there before, you know, and I don't have to be there anymore. It's great. It's a wonderful thing. So.
Yep, it really is.
I appreciate it. Alice, the return on investment, I know, is there. It's just not as fast as the 35 cent the hose clamps, but, you know.
No, I like the 35 cent investment. That works well.
Yeah, it's just, you know, a guy thinks that he's kind of mechanically inclined and he understands what's going on, and how could I have overlooked that, you know? Oh, well.
Yeah, it sometimes it's the easy things. We get caught up in the big picture and new concepts and new ideas. Sometimes we forget the simple stuff.
Well, and I was doing all the aerodynamic stuff, and I was getting better fuel economy, and it's like, oh my God, I'm only getting 8.5. What's the problem? You know, I mean, it masks the other things, you know. I mean, something else can go wrong and you don't notice it, you know.
Right, yeah, which is one of the reasons why when I get callers and they've got a new truck and the first thing they want to do is they want to know which modifications they should start doing. And my focus when we get a truck that we're not familiar with is really, we just need to make sure the truck is mechanically sound from front to back, and we know the truck and everything's solid and things are working right. Otherwise, we could just start masking some of those problems if we just start modifying right away.
Exactly. So I think next is probably ECM and then the new air filter, the fleet air filter. And then probably the exhaust manifold. So.
Good stuff.
Yep. So, well, thank you, Kevin, and we'll be listening to you this weekend.
All right.
Very,
I appreciate it.
You're very hard to get in Alaska. I was sitting on a hill. I couldn't tell you where it was. There was a sign that said wilderness. So I was in the wilderness, and I was up high enough that I could pick you up. But, XM doesn't work in Alaska very well, too far north. But.
Well, you know, I didn't realize it. We're on a satellite system now for our Internet, so that with the motorhome and the mobile studio, we can do the show from just about anywhere. We're not
right.
100% there yet. We're still perfecting a few things. But until I really studied the satellite technology that we put in here, I didn't realize it won't work in Alaska either.
Yeah, it's just too high or low of an angle, and, you know, there might be a mountain 100 miles away that's in the way. You can't even see it, you know, but, I mean, it's in the way, so... And there are mountains everywhere up there.
That's exactly what we figured out. So, and I really, I'd love to get back to Alaska, but I guess we'll actually have to take some time off when we go do that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. A lot of moose,
yeah.
Though. It's much safer driving in the summertime, though. There's so much daylight. You know,
yeah.
I took some pictures at 11:30 at night, you know. I mean, it's already past the peak, you know, where you have sun at midnight, but being light at 11:30 is pretty freaky, but it makes driving a lot safer, so
yeah,
you see the moose,
really does.
The moose standing in their own.
That's right. Good stuff. All right, keep us informed. I'd like to get the updates.
Will do. Thanks.
All right, take care. Have a great evening. All right, if you if you're on the call and you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, press 1. Lisa's waiting to talk to you. If you're listening online, we do still have some lines open, 347-884-8327. I've got a call or two to get to, but when we run out of calls tonight, I think we're going to wrap it up. So if you want to jump in, we've got about 20 minutes left in the show. So jump in now. Press 1 on your phone. And Lisa will screen your call. Let's go to Minnesota. Roger, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Say, I bought two Pittsburgh Power mufflers. I got W9s. I got a 2003 and I got a 99. But I just want to, on our 2003 there, we gained 3/10 of a mile per gallon, and we stuck it on that one. I mean, my partner could show, you know, notice the difference right off.
Wow.
And then, and
now that's 90 degree bend, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's the Kenworth there, the one where it goes out of both ends, or it comes out of the same end, you know. But now they got like a big tube, what do you want to call it, like that? Yeah, it goes. Yeah. It makes a 180 maybe there. Goes back.
Yeah, that's right. Not 90, 180. You're right. You're exactly right. The exhaust goes in the front and comes out the front.
Yep. But I just, the only thing that, you know, it's a little louder than what the regular mufflers are there and that, but you know, a guy can put up with it there with the, when you get the performance and the mileage.
Well, you know, this is the crazy thing to think about. You know, and I was just talking about the OEM saying that if there were better things, if this stuff actually worked, they would just do it. And nothing could be farther from the truth. Everything that they build on that truck is a compromise. And almost everything on that truck we could improve. Now, the crazy thing, where it seems crazy on the surface until you dive into the numbers. Let's say we bought that W9 brand new. If the smartest thing we could do is drive it right into the shop and put a muffler on it.
Yeah, and it won't take nothing.
Yeah, over a million mile time. If we keep our truck for 10 years, 9 years, we run it a million miles, that one change alone, if we did it on day one, would save us $20,000 over the life of the truck.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's just crazy. We don't want to think about, you know, bringing in a brand new truck and starting to change those parts out. And it seems crazy to spend the money, but it, in reality, it makes total sense.
Yeah, and I just, when we replace it there, my partner's always a little bit leery about changing stuff there, and he doesn't really believe in a lot of stuff there, you know, until you prove it to him there. But when we stuck his on there, and then the first week there, he just, the first trip he took, what did he notice the difference on performance there? And then through the quarter there, he always gets like about 5.8 there, and he had 6.1 with it this last quarter there.
Wow.
So we had
yeah,
it on for
know,
one quarter.
It's good to be skeptical, because I'll tell you, I've been testing fuel mileage stuff for 15 years, and most of the stuff I test really isn't worth it. I mean, that's why we got it down to our core group of products or technologies that we know 90% of the time it's going to work just the way we say it'll work, and you'll get the results. There's that other 10% where maybe, you know, whatever reason, who knows, we don't get as much of a result, or sometimes we don't get any result, and those are just kind of the odd cases. But I think, you know, we've narrowed it down to this group of products and technologies that works. We get a return, but it's always good to be skeptical, and we're still looking. You know, I'm always looking for that next product that really works, because there's a lot of junk out there that just doesn't.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's got the C model Cat 475, and I got the E model Cat there. And, like, well, I always beat him by a mile per gallon on every quarter. But
wow.
Like, this quarter I was 7.1. But then again, my schedule is a little bit different than his there, and you know, a lot of times I don't have to be in a big hurry to go, you know, to get to my destination there.
Right.
But I was wondering, too, there, I got the W9 there, and I got $1,250,000 on it there. It's a 99. Just always in the back of my head there, I just, you know, like if a guy would run across like a T600, would it be feasible there to, they found one in good shape there to pull my motor? I like my cat. I got some fine tuning done to it there, would it, like putting it in a 600 there, would it be feasible there? Would it gain any mileage on that with aerodynamics?
You know, if all the testing shows that if we could pull the entire drive line, you know, as long as we don't change anything else, if we took your drive line and we put it in a T600 and we didn't change anything else, the testing says we'll pick up 1 full mile per gallon.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but it's just always in the back of my mind. I love my W9 here, but I just always in the back of my mind there, you know, like, if a guy would, you know, if something would happen to it there, or just if a guy would run across the T600 there,
right.
I don't know how much work it would be to change things over if you found one with a cat in it there.
Yeah, that
you
would
know,
be
had
the
older
key.
Cat.
If you found it with the cat, then pulling out a motor really isn't that hard. You know, you take the hood, the core support, all the front end off, which really isn't that hard. You drop the motor in. I mean, it can be done in a day.
Yeah. And, but do they have, does Kenworth still make lighter kits, you know, like the 600s already? Do they still make them, or do they quit them?
They don't. We've been, Pittsburgh Power, Bruce, has been working with them, trying to get them to. They did get Peterbilt to release the 386 as a glider.
Yep.
So still kind of working on Kenworth, though. It would be nice because, if you could get the newer T660 or something like that in a glider kit, that would be really nice.
Yeah, I would love to put, like, my motor you know, like in my running gear, I'm into one of those, you know, and just keep the other crap away, you know.
Exactly, yeah. And you know, I think you would pick up a full mile per gallon doing that.
Yeah, I was always in the back of my mind there about doing that, something like that. And then, like, I run 24/5 low pros.
Okay.
And if I got 355s in here, and like my partner, he's got the 336s with 22s. But if I would go like 22 there, would that also help me out there? Would I gain anything with, you know, or gain a tenth or two? Or
how fast are you driving most of the time?
Well, right in about 60.
Oh, absolutely then. Yeah, the 22.5s will be better for several reasons. One, we have less spinning mass, which is always a positive.
Yeah.
We have lower rolling resistance on a smaller tire, and the best model tires many times are only available in the 22.5. So, and at 60 miles an hour on 355s, 22.5 low profiles will put you exactly where you want to be on the RPMs.
Okay. I was in the back of my mind there, too. I was always thinking if I run across a set of rims, you know, go that way.
That would be a good switch for you. And an even better switch for your partner with the 336s. Or did you see he already has 22.5s?
He has 22s on his.
Okay, good. That would be a good switch for you. And if you keep your eyes open, you know, the rims are pretty common. You can usually swap them out for next to nothing.
Yeah. And, because I'm getting my tires are getting down there now, and hopefully I can make them last till September there and that, and then I can stick a new set on. But I was curious about that there, too, so.
There you go.
I was real happy with the Pittsburgh Power muffler there and that. And I had the Turbo 3000 on for years, and then years ago there I stuck that that polished manifold or your own.
Oh yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
I've had that on there too and that. So.
Good.
It worked out real good. Would the air tabs, if a guy would throw them on, would that help for your mileage?
Yeah.
Or just kind of for your.
Now, that really has kind of become the more feedback I get from people, that has really become one of those no-brainers. I mean, I don't necessarily put a number on it, and the reason that I don't is there's such a variance between all the different trucks. You know, when we talk about air filters or mufflers, those kind of things, the return and the results are pretty consistent. With the air tabs, we get a return on every truck we put them on, but it's not always consistent what it's going to be. But the other thing about that product is I have never had one person unhappy. I've never had somebody call me and say, I really didn't, I don't see the point, or I'm not happy with them. If people feel the stability difference, that the rain spray is knocked down out of your line of sight. And we know if we're affecting aerodynamics enough that we feel it and we see it, then we're improving fuel mileage. We have to be.
Yeah. And then another thing was if a guy puts them on his trailer there, you know, with these LED lights there, you can't, they don't get warm enough where you melt the snow off of them there. And I was just wondering, would that keep the snow away from building up on the back of your lights there?
It certainly seems to. Yeah, it certainly seems to.
Okay.
We have lots and lots of examples of, you know, the back of the trailer staying clean.
Yeah. Oh, man. So. Okay. And I was just always going to comment on, like, I run bio, whenever I can buy biodiesel, just the soy diesel there.
Right.
I always, you know, like, there's a few spots where I can get 10% there. And I know a lot of guys, you know, don't like it there and that, but it seems like I get my best mileage there with the soy diesel there.
You know, see, that's an interesting topic, because when we talk about consistency, that's one of those things that people are all over the board. They're at the extremes.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a lot of people like you that say, They'll even go out of their way when they know they can go get it. They'll go get it. And I was just talking to somebody the other day. It was the exact opposite. He said, I'll go out of my way to avoid it because I have nothing but problems when I run it. So there doesn't seem to be any consistency, and I haven't really been able to put my finger on why. Is it because it's being produced differently and there aren't any standards to how it's being produced, or is it different trucks reacting differently? You know, maybe one of the things I've had people tell me is that it will break up a lot of junk in the fuel system, the varnishes in the tanks and the lines. And if that's the case and you start clogging a lot of fuel filters, well, you might not like it in the beginning. But if it really will clean out the system like that, maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's what, it's going to, when a person starts using it in the beginning, you're going to have, it's going to clean your system out. But if you gradually go into it there, your filters will take care of it there and you won't clog up. Like, I know a lot of guys have said that, you know, we put the bio in and, we made a trip and it, put 1,000 miles on, we had the clogged filter already, so. But
right.
I've never ran into that myself.
When I hear that, I almost think, well, that's probably a good thing. If we've got that much junk in our tanks and our lines that we could clog a filter in 1,000 miles, then maybe that's exactly what we need. We need the system cleaned out.
Yep, and I just, like my tanks, you look inside and it's clear there and that. And I just, I don't know, I just, when people say that there, I like there and that, it works for me, but it's got to be the soy bio, and I usually buy from the same sponsor,
I think that's a big part of it, too. I think there's a lot of inconsistency in the production of bio, and I think there might be some bad fuel out there that, once you've had that experience, then that's what you always remember.
Oh, yeah. And, one thing, like I got to say, when we leave, I always leave from a warm shop there where other guys have theirs outside there, and then I can see where you're going to have some problems there. But if you let your truck warm up enough there, you let it warm up and, I don't know. It just, but I just, when people say that there, I have good luck with it there. And then another thing I also do is, I always try to dump like a quart of oil in my tanks there, and then in each tank there when I fill, if I don't use bio. I go and I do that too, and it seems to help me out there.
For years, I ran, ATF, through at least once a week. I would dump in a quart of ATF in each tank when I topped them off, and it always worked well for me, and then I just got away from it. But I think that's still a good practice to put in some sort of lubricants, an oil, an automatic transmission fluid, a two-cycle oil.
Yep.
I mean, it seems to me like everybody who's ever done that gets positive results from it.
Yeah, and, that's just part of my deal there, that I just try, and it works for me, so I'll just keep on doing it there.
Yeah, I've never been able to find any negative, results or any reasons not to do it. So it's one of those things though, that I don't have any absolute proof. I can't find any research that says, yes, it improves the quality of the fuel. I can't find anything where it says it doesn't do anything. So I just don't know. It's one of those things that, I'm just going strictly on feedback from people and, but it doesn't seem like it can hurt anything.
Yeah. Say, when these guys call in and say they're getting 8-9 miles to the gallon there, is that, do they figure on the quarter, or do they just, on their computer, off their computer, or?
You never know. I mean, it's a radio show. People can call in and say whatever they want, and we have no way to really document it. For me, the only number I really like to go by for my own operation or for testing anything is a 30-day running average on paper tank to tank. I mean, I don't want to look at my fuel tax report. I don't want to look at a Qualcomm. I don't want to look at the computer. I want to know that, first of all, my odometer is correct. I mean, that's step number one. If we have an odometer that's 3 or 4 miles an hour off, that's going to skew our numbers. We need to be consistent in the way we top off the tank. And, you know, we need to check our numbers on paper so I know I drove this many miles this month, I burned this many gallons, and this is my running total for 30 days. I mean, that's the first number that matters to me. Then the next two numbers I look for in that 30-day period, what was my high and what was my low?
Yeah.
You know, we do get a lot of people that call and they'll say, my truck is getting 8.2 miles to the gallon. Well, what we really find out is that it's getting 7.4 for the 30-day average, but they had one of those tankfuls where from tank to tank they got 8.2, which is great. I'm glad people get excited about that, but it's not always the real number.
Yeah, I was always curious about that when they're calling in like that. And I keep track of every time I put fuel in, and then when I top the tanks off there, then I go check it out there, you know. But like I say, it's pretty hard, you know. Like I won't be consistent on the filling there, you know.
Right.
It might be a couple gallons off there and that, but.
Right.
I was always curious.
I have a truck that is driven by two different drivers every week on the same dedicated run. But one driver would do 4 days a week, and I had a driver who was part-time did 1 day a week. And every time they filled up, and I track their fuel mileage, I track every tank on my trucks, the one driver always got 3 to 4 tenths of a mile per gallon better. And I just couldn't figure it out. It was making me crazy. And you know, they're both great drivers, and there's, you know, it's a dedicated run. There isn't that much to change. Well, it turns out that it wasn't their driving habits at all. It was the way they fuel up the truck. The driver who gets the best fuel mileage every week, it's because when he fuels up the truck, he sticks the nozzle all the way down in, puts it on auto, and when it kicks off, he takes it out and hangs up the hose. Well, the other driver does the exact opposite. He squeezes, you know, every bit of fuel he can possibly get into. He's got the fuel coming up the filler neck before he stops. Well, now you think about it. The driver B on Saturday doesn't top the tank all the way off because he shuts it off early. Now when driver A comes in on Tuesday to run the truck and he goes to fill it up, not only is he filling it up more, he's also making up for the fuel the other driver didn't put in.
Yep.
So that was what I finally figured out the difference was. It wasn't their driving habits at all. It was the way they were topping off the truck.
Oh, okay. Oh. Yeah, I always try to fill mine the same, but you're never going to do it. Like, I mean, you're not, you know, going to get accurate on that.
Right. Now, you do need to try to be as consistent as you can. We're all out of time tonight. I want to thank everybody for joining me. And the live show is coming up on SiriusXM in 30 minutes, so join us for that. The live show is also on this weekend, as usual, 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern time. So join us for that. And check out the website, as always. Letstruck.com. We will continue to update the signature B truck, and we'll try to get some information up soon about what's going on at Dallas as well. Thanks for joining me. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.